Oliver Callan on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by It's for Women. Discover female health insurance through It's for Women.
I spoke briefly on the phone a couple of months ago to Annie Mack when she was in Belfast to collect an honorary doctorate from Queen's University. Much deserved. She promised next time she was back in Dublin that she'd call around. We could have a nice old proper chat over a cup of tea. So there's much to talk about. And she's here. Welcome, Annie Mack.
Hello, Oliver. It's very nice to be here.
To any of the uninitiated, if they are out there, you left the BBC Radio 1 show where you built your legendary status as a music influence in 2021, but you haven't quit the raving. You've become a Sunday Times best-selling novelist in between, and also returned to football.
Oh yeah!
So we've loads to talk about.
I mean, where do we start? It's vast.
Because you come over to your home quite a bit, I imagine, to your family.
I do.
In Dublin.
Yeah, I do. I come home a lot. It's half term over in England. It's really annoying because the school holidays in England and Ireland do not marry. Kind of annoying. But so we come over for the weekend. I was in Ennis yesterday, watching Fermanagh versus Clare in the Gaelic football. My nephew was doing the showcase thing at halftime with his team. So yeah, I was just going to see my sister over there. Now I'm with my parents in Dublin. Yeah.
Great. So you had a thoroughly Irish weekend.
Oh, hugely Irish weekend. It's been deadly. Yeah. Try and cram it all in.
Who won between Fermanagh and Clare, actually? I didn't get that.
Well, so we watched the first half, then we watched my nephew, and then we had to go.
Oh, yeah.
So I don't know who won. But Fermanagh were winning, I think.
You would be expecting Fermanagh to do it.
Yeah.
As we say, so much to talk about. The novel, because last time we were chatting, we never got to talk about your novels. Yeah. People were texting in going, we love them, we love them. Where is the latest one? Where is that?
So The Mess We're In is my most recent one that came out. That came out last year in paperback. And that is kind of a lot about being Irish in England. It's about a young one who travels over to London and wants to get into music. And she lives with a rock band. And it's kind of a year in her life, kind of coming of age novel. Mm. And I'm in the process of writing number 3. So I've kind of spent first half of this year, well, the whole first part of this year, whatever, it's 6 weeks or whatever it's been, just fully immersed in the first, in kind of getting the first draft into the second draft. So the first edit, trying to get the structure right, pull it into shape. So that's been, it's kind of when you finish doing that, when you finish working on a draft, you kind of feel like a little mole coming out of the ground. Like I just feel like I haven't been in the world at all.
Rejoin society then.
Yeah, really like that. Because so that's what I've been doing over the last, well, for this half term, just trying to like get back into the world a bit. Yeah.
I was reading reviews of The Mess We're In over the weekend, and I mean, it just sounds like your life, young one. And it's the turn of the millennium, isn't it? It's 90s into the noughties.
Yeah.
And I mean, you lived with your brother who was in a band.
I did, yeah.
I don't know if you worked in a bar like the character
did.
No, I didn't. And that's where the kind of homely stories come from. She's working at a bar and hearing owlfellas in London.
Yeah, it's kind of, I wanted to try and encapsulate what it's like for someone from my generation to leave Ireland, because it always felt like an underlying inevitability, you know, that everyone just left. That was what she did. That's what I did. And
still going on now.
Yes. And I never really thought about it at the time. You're just all starry-eyed. You're like, get me to London. I want to go and see what happens over there. And so for me, I didn't once look behind me. And, you know, at the end of the dedication of the book, it's kind of a thank you to my parents because they helped facilitate my leaving like the south of Ireland when I did. And I never thought at the time what it must have been like for them, you know, got the youngest of four off to England. And I never thought about it at the time, you know, why I was leaving and under what kind of context I was leaving. And only 20 years later, when I kind of came out of the madness of being a DJ and a touring DJ and being on Radio 1 for all those years, did I actually think, I've got kids with English accents. What's happened? What's happened? What am I doing here? And I had this big kind of a couple of years post-COVID of thinking, should I move back? And, you know, being quite obsessed with that idea and looking at schools and all that.
And you had just left BBC Radio 1 around that time.
Yeah, just previously. Yeah, yeah. So I think there was also the compounding that kind of confusion was the fact that I didn't have to be in London anymore. You know, I could work from anywhere. I was a writer. I was a podcaster. You could do those from anywhere. So I could actually have moved back. But then, you know, there's other people to consider. My husband is a music producer. He actually produces the Kneecaps albums.
Really?
Yeah, I heard you talking about them. So he, you know, he's busy in London. He's got a lot of work there. So it would have been a big ask for him.
But he's not a Londoner either.
No, he's a Yorkshireman.
So this is the neutral territory, is it, London?
It is that, you know. It's very much neutral, but there's pros and cons with that. And I suppose the cons are that you don't have, you know, his family are in Yorkshire, my family are in Dublin and in Ireland. So we don't have close family. So you kind of have to make family. And part of the mess we're in that book was kind of me coming to terms with that and discovering my local Irish pub and the people in there and realising that they were kind of extensions of me in that way. We're all kind of people who've left Ireland and kind of live in the seams of the two countries and we're kind of misfits, you know, and I suppose feeling a sense of affinity towards those people.
That's a really interesting concept. Just you have to go find a new family when you're out of...
That's what happens. Yeah, that's what happens. You have to go and find friends that can act as family. And you have to kind of try and root yourself in the area. And I think what I'd done in England for so long is when you're Irish, you have this kind of sense of a safety net. You know, oh, I'll always go back to Ireland. You know, everyone's back there. I can always go back. And then I think my oldest son started secondary school this year or last year. And that was a real sense of like, oh, we're here now.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
And I really
can't
have
to uproot him now.
I can't uproot him and I have to root myself. Mm-hmm. Like my heart is in Ireland. I need to kind of try and make my heart in London as well a little bit, as well as my head. So that's what the football was about. And what the Irish pub was about is me trying to find a sense of community and a sense of, you know, some roots in London that I can call my own.
It sounds like it's an ongoing pursuit.
Yes. I don't think it ever ends.
Yeah. It doesn't end.
No. But the football was cool. Like I wanted to try and just get a sense of locality and also with that try and kind of get a sense of community as well. And there's nothing like a football team to give you a sense of community.
I find this extraordinary story and I've read it's on Substack.
Yeah,
I
have
a whole
Substack
story
where I write essays on my personal life. Yes.
I mean, well, give us the idea. It comes from a very simple place, isn't it? It's 2022 and with your now English family,
yeah,
you're at home cheering on the Lionesses at the English women's football team.
Yeah, we're actually on the Flaggy Shore. We were on holidays in County Clare near the Burren, and the Euros was on. I was with my whole extended family and the Lionesses were playing and we were all rooting for England, which, as we know, is quite a rare thing.
Especially now it's in Clare. Yeah. I'm hearing a whole different thing.
But I think because it was women and they were playing Germany and because... my kids are, you know, I call them half Irish, but they would, you know, they would probably call themselves English. They're born and raised in England, and my husband's English as well. So my family were rooting for England on behalf of them.
And it was a great story.
And it was such a good story. Yeah. And they won. And it was just it was so wild. I just remember watching it and feeling so emotional and then having to question, why am I so emotional about this? And it made me kind of turn the mirror on myself. I used to play football all the way through my childhood. I was one of three girls who played, you know, you had the choice in primary school, Irish dancing or football. I always played football. I played for the boys' teams. And I kind of then went to Wesley College. There was no options for football there, so I played hockey. So I played team sports all the way through. Yeah. But then I went to college and discovered raving and sport
that was
got
it. But you were good at football when you were
I was
a kid.
Really into football, yeah. I don't know if I was good. I must have been good because I got to play for the team.
Yeah.
So, and I used to play down the green in my housing estate. Like all day I'd go down there and play with the local fellas. So I just it was like a natural thing that I liked to do. And then I kind of forgot about it. And then... recently, after the Lionesses, I was like, why is it that I don't see women of my age in their 40s or even in their 30s playing football when you see loads of fellas playing five-a-sides down
after social life?
Yeah. I started assistant coaching my kids' team because I got annoyed that all the coaches were fellas and all the women stood by the sides with the water bottles. And I was like, why? Again, there's this kind of sense of just a pattern here. That the dads very kindly volunteer to coach and the women just kind of hold the coats, you know. So I started assistant coaching my kids' team and really enjoyed that and then started playing myself. And it's honestly, Oliver, it's changed my life. It's changed my life. I thought that I would be too old to play competitive football. I play in a league with the women's team.
You're quite serious by the sounds of it because you're on the team and it's every Sunday.
We train twice a week and we play on Sundays. Our league matches are on Sundays and they take us all over London. It's kind of cool. You get to go to every corner of London and it's all, you know, it's not... I'm one of three women on my team who are in their 40s, but most of them are in their 20s
really?
And 30s. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Tell us through your first kind of competitive match how that went. How you were feeling?
I was absolutely, I can't say the word or else I'll swear, but I was so scared. And but I remember feeling in the changing room like I got given my kit for the first time and feeling so emotional about it and like having to like hold back tears and just like hold it down, Annie. Jesus Christ, be cool. Like all these girls, like it's totally normalised for them. But for me, it just, I don't know, it just felt like this lovely full circle moment where I was kind of coming back to myself in a way. Mm. And then on the pitch, all my fear kind of turned into anger in a way, but healthy anger. The girl I was marking was a wagon, basically. And she was very entitled and kept like questioning the ref in a really entitled way, which really did my head in. And I think there was a sense of kind of, oh, I'm angry at you. There was a righteousness that came with the anger that felt really good. But the other thing that I noticed is just how unbelievably exhausting it is. Like the intensity of exercise you do on a football pitch. I mean, similarly watching the guy yesterday, I was like, the fitness levels are crazy.
Savage.
Yeah.
But you're very good at this, and that's why you're still playing.
I don't know. I'm not, I get subbed on and off all the time. I'm definitely no star player, but I just enjoy it and it makes me feel
this
so alive.
Some kind of gap that was in your life that you didn't know until suddenly you were cheering on.
Yeah, but I think a lot of people listening will relate that when you get to your 40s, there's something about coming back to things that you did in your childhood. Like that's definitely been the case for me. Mm. I know a lot of people my age who are kind of weirdly coming back to religion. And like going to church, going to mass or joining choirs again and like things that they might have done when they were small. There's a comfort in it, I think. Yeah.
Is it mostly for people who are long far from home now at this stage?
I don't know. I think maybe because there's something about it that obviously reminds you of home. But I think it's more than that for me as well. I think it's like you get waylaid in your life. You kind of you follow paths. You get taken places in your life. And for me, that was definitely the case, you know, with radio and with DJing. I just kind of went down this mad path for 15, 20 years.
Yeah.
And kind of came out of it a little bit like dazed, you know, a few years ago. And the further I get from radio, which is a really British institution, and, you know, the kind of closer I get to the person I was when I grew up in Dublin.
That's interesting. It's almost like you paused yourself and you're returning back.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And in between becoming a best-selling novelist, of course, as well.
Well, that's also weirdly coming back around to my childhood as well. And
is it?
Yeah, I mean, I was keeping journals from when I was 10 and I always wrote. I loved English. An amazing English teacher in school. So I think that there's a sense of I just stopped. Like I journaled now and again, like sporadically all the way through my life. But I think any sense of ambition to write just kind of got waylaid by my career in radio and DJing. So coming back around to that's been lovely.
Because on one hand, it looks like a huge gamble to give up the big job in a revered institution. And was the novel ready to go at that stage, the first one, which was Mother's?
Yeah, it was kind of ready to go. But, you know, it was a gamble. People always said at the time, Oliver, they were like, are you sure? Like, this is the dream job. But, like, you know in your heart when you're not giving it what it deserves. And I felt like that I was coasting for too long in that job. And I'd been doing it for 17 years. And I think there's something really exciting about being able to move through to a different era in your life and challenge yourself and learn. I felt like I'd kind of stopped learning. And for me, that's the key. You know, you have to keep learning in life.
Are you busier now because you've got the novels, you're playing football for yourself.
Yeah.
And you're doing lots of events around writing because you were chatting to Roddy Doyle in the Irish Centre.
Yeah, that was amazing.
And I think you're on Other Voices this week. Which
yes, Other Voices drops on Thursday.
And on all of these Before Midnight raves that you're doing as well.
Yeah, it does sound a bit mad when you say it like that. But basically, I'm DJing, I'm writing, and I'm still doing podcasting. And those three things are kind of keeping me going. And I am busy, but I'm more busy on my own terms, which is amazing. I still pick the kids up from school every day. And it's nice to be your own boss and set your own agenda.
Sporadic working as opposed to being confined the whole time. Is that the
idea? Well, it's all the time working, but it's just being able to do it in your time. Yeah, yeah.
I'm in trouble here in the text, Annie, because Claire actually beat Fermanagh in the end.
Oh, sorry. They were the better team. They were the better team.
117 to 115. Apparently, I've upset a lot of Clare people saying that you'd expected that Fermanagh won. There you go. I'm just bitter because Monaghan lost.
Can I just say as well, like, being in Ennis, that's where I was yesterday, they have this new library there and it's blown my mind. It's a state-of-the-art, gorgeous, massive new library. And the whole town are using it. And it just made me realise, you know, when you live between two countries, you really get to see how they differ. And I couldn't tell you any instance of a new library opening in London or in England in recent times. Like, it just made me feel like so happy for Ennis and for Clare that those kind of things are happening. I can't speak for the whole country, but it just felt...
It sounds like you're there quite a lot.
Well, yeah, my sister lives there, so we go there.
Oh, that's where you're there?
Yeah, yeah.
And Clare is a very good place for writers to be hanging around.
Oh, my God, yeah.
Ennis.
Yeah,
they've got a great theatre as well, Glore Theatre. You have a little faith. Clare won on the banner. Like Annie Mac, I emigrate as well. I live in Galway.
Yay. I'm playing in Galway soon, in March.
Very good.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And
see
someone's
just
saying they saw you last summer, saw your show in Galway last summer, just deadly. Thanks for having Annie, and I adore her. The podcast, the books and her music. Tell us about Galway, actually, because you're coming back for the St. Patrick's weekend, basically.
Yes, so on the Saturday, I think that's the 15th, I'm in Leisureland. I think there's a couple of hundred tickets left for that.
Friday at Leisureland.
Is it Friday or Saturday?
I hate to correct you, but...
Is it Friday? Sure, it's Saturday. Anyway... One of them days. And then Sunday I'm in Vicar Street, that's sold out. And then the Monday, which is actually Paddy's Day.
That's an added date.
Is an added date. And that still has 100 tickets left. So if you want to come and see me there.
You're going to spend St. Patrick's Day. And it's called Before Midnight because what times are do you rave from?
Well, it starts around 7, 8 and then it ends always before midnight. And the whole point is that it's for anyone who wants to go out dancing but needs to get their sleep at the end of the day.
And this is working really well. And you're going to be in Newcastle, as in the English Newcastle, and Bristol, either side of your Irish events.
Yeah, yeah, it's working so well. It's been an absolute revelation. It's just been so cool because it was a decision made on a selfish level because I didn't feel like I was able to sustain the lifestyle that clubbing and like working in clubbing hours, traditional night clubbing hours, asked of me. You know, going out at 11, coming back home at 4, 5, 6 in the morning. It's just hard when you've got young kids at home. So I wanted to still be able to DJ and do those kind of things, but in more suitable, accessible hours. And when you think about it, like you go see a theatre show, you go see a band, you go see a comedian, they all happen 8, 9, 10 at night.
That's right.
Why can't you go and see a DJ at that time?
Perfect sense. I was wrong. It is Galway. You're absolutely correct. Yeah. You know your dates. Not on. Sorry about that. That's for Galway listeners. It's on the Saturday of the Patrick's
15th.
Weekend.
Yeah.
And you do more events at the London Irish Centre as well. This is to do with writing, isn't it? A meeting.
Yeah. So this has been another thing, like in terms of just, you know, how to build roots and feel like you belong in a city when you're not from there. Mm-hmm. And the London Irish Centre is such an amazing place. It's a community centre, but it's also like far reaching in terms of, you know, charity work and what it does for the Irish people over there. And the huge amounts of people who are vulnerable. And, you know, that could be anything from printing out a Ryanair boarding pass for someone who doesn't have a printer to, you know, whole sections where they help anyone who's affected by mother and baby homes. Like they're so brilliant. And as part of that, I do a kind of once a quarter, I do a kind of book club, a literary salon, and I invite authors over, Irish authors. And we have pints and we have music and we have chats and it's amazing. Roddy Doyle was amazing last week. He had everyone, our face hurt, you know, from laughing. You know, when you're smiling for that long, it was that, yeah.
And it's a lovely building as well, isn't it? It's in Camden.
Beautiful.
That centre. And you're doing more of those as well.
Yes, yes.
You were talking about the identity and the, you know, getting the roots down or keeping the roots.
Yeah.
Because you very, while cheering on the Lionesses and the England squad, you very quietly and politely turned down an MBE at one stage.
Yes.
On the British monarch.
Yes.
It was a brave thing to do.
Do you think?
Well, it's a nice old thing, isn't it? Is it a medallion in a... You'll never know.
I don't know.
Now.
I've never seen it. I don't know what it looks like or what it is. So it was services for broadcasting. And there was something lovely in being recognised for that.
Yeah.
I don't know. I just didn't feel... I didn't feel in my gut right in taking that. And it's all down... it's all down to the language of it, the fact that the language is still using the word empire, which has so many historical connotations that are not good. And I feel, to me, it's more like it's so easy to change the language. It would be so simple and easy. And the fact that they didn't, to me, was quite surprising. It's just like, surely by now you've had so many people turn this down for those reasons. It would be so simple and easy just to change that language, and you don't. And that to me was I don't know, just didn't make me want to join that club.
Quite a few British people turn it down for the same reason,
yes,
don't they?
Yes, they do. Yeah, they do.
What did your mammy say?
Mammy was initially like, she thought I should take it because she was very aware of what Britain has done for me in terms of, you know, my job, and I met my husband there. I've had a home there, my family there. She was like, sure, just take it. But yeah, I think she understood why I didn't.
She just wanted the day out in Buckingham Palace.
She wanted the new hat.
Yes, you can have to wear that. But of course, it could end up badly. And rather than getting the Queen, as it would have been at the time, I presume, was she still alive at the time, or King Charles? You still ends up with some random duke from back of nowhere. So I must feel sorry for those people who've gotten to the trouble of accepting this thing. We didn't accept it. And Barry McGuigan turned it down once, and they offered it again to him.
And did he take it the second time?
Yeah, he did. 8 years
I wonder
later,
what
he said,
changed.
Okay. Well, I suppose the fact they turned it down the first time is that they're asking again.
Yeah.
So I might as well.
Getting a bit embarrassing.
Made
now.
His home over there. And he's very cross community. I mean, he's one of those rare creatures. And I find it fascinating that, you know, you did your education in Belfast as well.
Yes.
You've kind of been.
It's a weird. It's not a path well travelled that Dubliners going up to Queens. And maybe more so now, but back then it wasn't.
Not even now. It's strange. Some people, you know, with the housing crisis, the price of rent in Dublin, they will go to Australia quicker than they'll choose the north for some reason. But there you go. I'm the same age as Annie, says this person.
Yeah.
I always admired her in Belfast University. When I need to get my act together, I look at what she's doing. What a hard worker. Her success is testament to her hard work. And that's from Suzanne.
Oh, thanks, Suzanne.
Sounds like someone who was watching you in
Queens. Hope it wasn't at the time. I was a right mess.
I'm also home from London for midterm with the English-Irish family. Annie's such a wonderful shining Irish light in London. It's cool to be Irish now in London. Right, Annie?
That's mark. Well, honestly, it feels like there's it feels really exciting at the moment. Just being Irish, in England feels deadly.
It's probably louder now than it used to be.
It's louder. And I think there's a sense of Irish people not, what's the word? Like, you know, the Irish people being unafraid to be fully Irish. You know, and not trying to change or shapeshift or to kind of fit into Englishness. And you see that in all of the arts and in, you know, everyone from in the music and in the acting and everything. People are just shouting from the rooftops about how proud they are to be Irish. And it's deadly. I feel the same.
It feels a little bit like when the minute Sally Rooney just put The Leaving Cert and Gaelic football into a novel and refused to explain it.
Yes.
It's like, you look it up.
No, that's such a huge thing, you know.
And kneecap and everything else on Colin Kuhn.
It's such a huge thing. It's a lack of having to explain yourselves. That's it, really. You've hit the nail on the head.
Annie, thanks so much for coming to chat.
Pleasure.
Annie Max, Before Midnight Club is on the St. Patrick's Bank holiday weekend. It's in Galway and in Dublin, Vicar Street as well. AnnieMcManus.com has all of the details.
Yeah, well, Substack's the best.
Substack's the best. Get all those wonderful articles and so on. Thanks a million, and
thank you,
enjoy the rest of English midterm.
Nice to meet you.
Sláinte, bye bye.